Hello and welcome to The Bottom Line. The Bottom Line is the official podcast of Harvard Ventures, the largest student-run entrepreneurship and venture capital organization at Harvard. Our club and this podcast seek to demystify and encourage active, informed, and meaningful participation in startups and venture capital among Harvard students. My name is Caleb Klein, and I'm this year's director of the podcast. I'm so excited to announce the beginning of season four and introduce you all to our first guest, Arhan Chabra. Arhan is a sophomore here at Harvard College studying computer science and economics, is a serial student founder, and a good friend of mine whom I was lucky enough to meet through Harvard Ventures' incredible network. Arhan is currently working on his YC-backed startup, Rove, the first ever travel credit card for Gen Z. All right, I've done enough yapping for now. So Arhan, why don't you say hello? We'll skip the Harvard intros for now. Let's hear a little bit about Rove and how you got started.
Hey, Caleb, thanks so much for having me on the podcast. Super excited to be speaking and starting off, you know, the fourth season, which I'm really excited for. So yeah, I guess a little bit about, you know, Rove and what we're doing. This all started about 9 months ago. So over the summer of 2023, when I was scrolling through Slack, there was this channel called the Ivy League Entrepreneurship Group. I'm not sure if I'm still in it. I was somehow in it before even getting into Harvard or any college for that matter. So it's just this like really dead Slack channel. And I was scrolling through it one day because somebody put like an Amazon gift card refund scam and they did the at channel notification. So it tagged me and I was trying to find a leave or mute button. And as I was scrolling through trying to find that, I come across this one post from a guy called Max. It was like a Qualtrics survey. And it was talking about how he was really into like all things credit card, you know, travel hacking. He wanted to build something in the space. It was just a market study. I don't know what it was, but I reached out to him, scheduled a, you know, 30-minute call just to get to know him because I was also super into, you know, credit cards, and it's rare to find other people our age that are into, you know, traveling for free using points. So I scheduled a 30-minute call, and that call ran something like 9.5 or 10 hours. We just really clicked, you know, had this idea for a product that we wanted to build and went from there. And Max, you know, had this vision for essentially a few of the problems that he'd noticed and I'd noticed in the space, and we wanted to build a credit card to solve that. And so that's sort of how Rove began. It's been a hectic but really fun, you know, 9 months ever since, just building out the product and going from there.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an incredible kind of like classic movie-esque story about how you met your co-founder. Let's hear like a little bit more about Rove itself, like kind of what is Rove, who is it targeting, like about Gen Z, and yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. So essentially the story behind this is my co-founder and I, you know, we've been travel hacking our way around the world since we were in high school. We were opening up cards, you know, in our parents' names and using different points, arbitrage opportunities, glitches in the system sometimes, literally, to find, you know, first class and business class flights and book them for less than what most people are paying for economy tickets. And so we were able to go, you know, between my Max and I think we've been to something like 45 or 50 countries for free. And so, you know, naturally all of our friends would ask us like, hey, how do I do this? And I'd say, okay, go open an Amex Platinum, go open a Chase Sapphire, and these 10 other different travel cards. But nobody our age qualifies. And the reason for that is, you know, we noticed that FICO is really effective at underwriting people that are our parents' age, right? They have mortgages under their name, you know, car lease payments, decades of payment history, all of these rich data points. But for people that are, you know, your age, my age, even 25 or 30 that have stable income and a job and are credit worthy, but just haven't had that many decades to sort of prove themselves to the bureaus, they just don't qualify. And so most of our friends weren't qualifying for the cards we were opening. Even those that did were hesitant to spend $500, $600, $700 a year in fees. And then even like the two friends I know who were able to get past both of those two barriers, they ended up just donating their points to me for lunch. And, you know, I'd buy them a nice lunch as a thank you and then use those points to like go take a first class like round the world trip. Because they didn't know how to redeem, get value out of them. They didn't know how to like do the points hacking and really game the system to get the value that these points are supposed to deliver. And so we noticed these two gaps on the usability and the accessibility of travel cards. And so what we're doing at Rove is really solving both of those two problems. So on the accessibility front, we're using a radically new way to underwrite people. Rather than just using FICO, we're using a new technology called cash flow underwriting, basically connecting with people's bank accounts and assessing how creditworthy they are based on their cash flow, how much money is coming in and out, and the purchasing cadences there. And what we find is, you know, we can approve essentially 40% more people than anybody else in the travel space. And these 40% we approve, the new market we create, is young adults, immigrants, and Gen Zs that don't qualify for anything else. And we're also a no annual fee card. And on the usability front, Really what we're doing is building the first ever integrated points portal. So partnering with a bunch of airlines, we have our own alliance of airlines that we're assembling at the moment. I actually just met with one of them, this afternoon here in Hong Kong to finalize another partnership. But, getting these airlines to promote their deals directly on our app, building a Google Flights-like experience, but for points rather than cash bookings, to make it really easy so we can do the points hacking for the user on the back end automatically.
Sounds like you're opening up the world to Gen Z. Something I would certainly partake in. I love to travel. I know you love to travel. So, like, how much easier is the day-to-day life when you're doing something that you're so passionate about that you love? Like you said, you've always traveled, you've always partaken in points hacking, and now you're trying to help others do that. So, just how much easier is the day-to-day when you're doing something that you truly love and are passionate about?
It certainly makes it a lot more fun. I feel like I've never had to ever come up with a pitch for this product or really think about how I explain the need for it. I just tell, either the story that I just told or a billion different versions of it that I've heard from friends because it's something that I wish I had, right? We often joke we're building this card for ourselves, and if we have a million other users, then that's great. But I just need it because I'm tired of doing the travel hacking and the points hacking. And so it does make things a lot easier. I mean, it's great that, we're a travel company. I think people often talk about PMF, like product market fit, and obviously you need product market fit, but I think product founder fit's really important too. If you don't see yourself really using the product as a founder, or at least resonating with it and understanding it, it's a lot harder to sort of imagine other people using it as well.
Yeah, so we've established that product founder fit is very important. One thing that I've heard about being a student founder is that it's good to start. Like people want to help students, people want to help young founders. It's not necessarily the case when you're a quote unquote like adult in the real world. It's like what's that experience been like for you? Have you had a lot of people eager to help you?
I do think it's helpful. I mean, I'm very fortunate to be at Harvard where there are, amazing groups like Harvard Ventures and, a lot of other organizations on campus that have strong networks, that know investors, that know, people in the space, connect us with the right people. And it's very helpful to have that network. So if I had to start, another company all over again, I think it certainly is really helpful to be in an environment like that, at least for the first, 6 to 8 months of the company life cycle. Just because you get that sort of launch pad, that built-in network and support from people. I do also think being a student, people that are in the startup space sort of see you as the underdog. Even though in reality, I think a lot of startups do come from students and are founded by students, you often get this sort of like underdog advantage from an optics perspective where people want to help you because it's like, wow, like this guy's like, a student, he has school, and then he's still doing this on the side. He probably needs a little bit of extra help. Whether it's true or not, is something else, but it certainly does give me, a little bit of a head start, I think, and other student founders that I'm friends with on campus as well. Like as an example, there's all sorts of ways you can use it beyond just like the fundraising and network. One fun story. So like late last year, we were trying to close a couple of the networks, like there's like Visa, MasterCard, and whatnot. And we wanted to meet with executives, but we didn't want to pay, $6,000 or $7,000 for entrance tickets to this like fancy fintech conference in Las Vegas. And so we just convinced them that we were like Harvard Press and we got permission from, the right people on campus to say that we're a photographer and a writer there to report on an article. And we did make an article at the end of it. But obviously, we were also there for other reasons. We're able to sort of get in as like Harvard like media sort of representatives, not of the school, but as individual authors. And it just was a really sort of like, hands-on, like sort of scrappy way to get in and save the 7 grand that we didn't have at the time. So it's things like that, right? Like whether it's like breaking into like a fintech conference or just convincing someone to take a meeting with you, it does help.
So hacking the system since day one, you would say. That's a really exciting story. Do you have any others, like other unconventional things you've done building this startup, other just really exciting, unique opportunities that have come up during this whole process?
I mean, it's everything, right? It's like every day I'll get something that's like, huh, no way. Like, I wouldn't imagine that one happening. Today we got a text saying that we're getting a free billboard in Times Square in a couple of weeks. So I'm actually gonna be doing a photo shoot soon to like get a few photos with like a mock-up of the card and like me and my co-founder to put on the Times Square billboard. But it's like really random opportunities like that that are just so sort of out of the ordinary, but they just sort of present themselves to you sometimes. What else? I think a lot of it's just the startup community. So I was in Italy this January with about 75, 80 other founders through an accelerator I'm in called Prod. And, one day we had this like random challenge from somebody who's in the Prod community where it was like, do the craziest thing you can do in 18 hours, and whoever wins gets a large prize. And people did all sorts of crazy things. Like Max, my co-founder, was able to fly to Paris on like 4 hours of notice with his like randomly assigned group and network their way into meeting a billionaire who owned a football that, or like a soccer ball that owns a hundred, that's worth $100,000, because it was the soccer ball that was used in like one of the FIFA games. And they were just playing soccer with this like ball that cost 100 grand. We flew to Malta on like, I think, an hour and a half of notice. We just pulled up to the airport and booked tickets right there and then, and were able to convince the Malta government to let us write policy for the EU on like AI and AI like ethics on zero notice, basically. Which, like, this sounds so random, and in the grand scheme of things, it's meaningless, but I think it's a great exercise, right? That's what entrepreneurship is all about. It's coming up with, really scrappy solutions on tight budgets, tight turnarounds, and just doing really, really stupid shit sometimes. But it's fun. And when you surround yourself with other people that do dumb stuff, then you do a little bit of it too, and you get to learn how to like put these opportunities together when they don't exist.
Yeah, so I think in that answer, which was filled with the most exciting stuff that I think I would have paid myself to be part of, I heard one somewhat negative thing, which is that you have a tight budget. So I want to touch on like not all the glamour of the startup, but like what's something that's been challenging? What's been some tough stuff?
I mean, fundraising is always an interesting experience. I think at the very beginning of fundraising, we didn't really know how to do it. My last venture was a business, not a startup, so we bootstrapped it entirely, never really needed to fundraise for it. And so this was my first time with Rove, properly fundraising, going to all the big names, the tier one VCs you hear about, the angels, the family offices, and really pitching. And the way we did it at the beginning is certainly very different the way we do it now. We've learned a lot from our advisors, our mentors, and peers as well in how we do it. But I think, at the beginning, really just figuring that out and figuring out this really weird dynamic, which is fundraising for a startup, was certainly part of it. The other thing is just given our space, because we're a fintech, oftentimes we're dealing with bottlenecks that are out of our control. So we're working with a bank, a processor, compliance, underwriting, network, all of these different parties that are not startups. They're big companies. Some of these are, billion-dollar companies and much beyond that. And so you have to sort of work on their timelines. If they say, hey, I want you to be in New York tomorrow morning, you have to be in New York tomorrow morning. If they say, hey, like, we're going on Christmas break for 2 months, like, you just gotta wait 2 months before that email comes in. And so working on the timelines of large organizations often adds bottlenecks that are hard when you're supposed to be moving as fast as possible as a startup. But that's part of, doing business with large companies.
Yeah, and I think so. A lot of what you were saying is that flexibility is very essential when you're a young, scrappy entrepreneur. And luckily for you, you have a very good co-founder, Max, who's also a student, for those who do not know. And it's not all too common to hear a young entrepreneur expressing how they need like a seasoned co-founder, a seasoned team with 10, 20 plus years of experience around them, even though they themselves have no experience and they're a first-time founder, or in your case, you've had a couple startups under your belt. How do you feel about that?
I don't know if I agree with that. I certainly would much rather found something with somebody who is willing to, do the sleepless nights, do the sort of ridiculous things like the Vegas story and whatnot, and just take a lot of risk. And I feel like, a seasoned entrepreneur is great, but sometimes it's this like optimism that is unjustified because you just don't know better that allows you to do things. Like, I was watching this interview from the CEO of NVIDIA, Jensen, who was talking about how, so an interviewer, it was like, it went viral. The interviewer asked him if he could do it all over again, would he? And he was like, hell no, like, absolutely not, with a straight face, immediate answer. And I think part of that is I still don't know what is to come, right? Like, I'm still very early in the Rove journey. I have no idea what to expect over the next few years and decades for this. And so part of that sort of ignorance almost is the bliss of like running the startup, right? So I don't really know if I agree with the need to have like a co-founder who's, much older, much more experienced from a career perspective. I think the right thing to do though is to surround yourself with advisors who can do that. And we've been very fortunate. We have people who have sold multiple billion-dollar companies in their careers, investing and advising for us. We have people from like Capital One, Apple Card, X1, big credit card fintechs who advise us on all the economic stuff that we have no idea about. People who have done YC two or three times and who know, the space really, really well, to sort of tell us when we're making mistakes and when we're not. So I think oftentimes really, you know, surrounding yourself with somebody who's also like as sort of new to this as you in many ways allows you to learn with them. And that's something that I really appreciated.
Yeah, so I mean, like youth and ignorance is kind of a skill at times. I mean, it can help you, it can boost you, it can keep you motivated. So it sounds exciting. I mean, is it just like is it easy to be discouraged at times being the youngest in the room, kind of being the underdog, like you said before?
I don't find it to be. I find it exciting. I think we're very fortunate with the people we've been working with. And I think this is also just generally a broader trend, especially in the US. You know, I notice this a lot, even at bigger companies like, you know, the banks and the networks and whatnot that we're partnering with. We're often the only people under 50 in the room. And, you know, for context, I'm 19, Max is 21. And so, you know, we don't, at least I don't feel like our opinions are undervalued because of our age, even by people that obviously have much more experience and much more wisdom than us. I think if anything, it sort of helps because it's sort of like, why are you in this room, right? You're not, you know, you clearly stand out. And so I feel like that sort of draws more attention, which attention is everything in a business negotiation, in a partnership, in really anything you're doing for a startup. So I find it to be very helpful if harnessed correctly.
And then, so on that kind of power dynamic, is it what's the balance between being humble and being kind of aggressive and be like, yeah, I'm the youngest in the room and I'm kind of here for a reason and I'm gonna try to take what I want. Like,
Yeah.
what does the balance look like there?
It really depends, I guess, on who I'm talking to. For fundraising, it's very much the latter. For partnerships, the former. I'm always trying to learn from other people. I have learned so much in the past 9 months, more than I've learned in like the first 18 years of my life combined. And I think a lot of that is just because I've been fortunate to like talk to a lot of people whom I probably wouldn't have otherwise been talking to until I was 40 or 50 if I had just gone the normal sort of corporate route, right? And so because of that, I think I'm always trying to learn from people and surround myself with people that know more about me, even if they're on the other side of the negotiation, because either ways, I'll come out knowing more than I went in.
Yeah, so it's a very dynamic process, always changing, always knowing who you're talking to, who you're talking with, who you're targeting, what you need to get out of things. And that sounds like a lot of kind of what the student founder experience is. So I want to thank you for your time and all your thoughtful responses so far. I do have one last question. So as we look to wrap up this episode, what advice can you give to other aspiring student entrepreneurs that are listening to our podcast? How can they best tap into the collegiate entrepreneurship environment? How can they best balance school and startups? Whatever comes to mind, I know it's like a couple questions I should throw out at you, but just whatever kind of comes to mind.
You're really asking the wrong person for advice. First piece of advice is don't listen to me for advice, but I guess, you know, don't do school. I don't know. No, school's great. I mean, you know, it's obviously necessary, but I think it's very easy to get sort of wrapped up. You know, even I did this freshman year and like, oh, like there's like recruiting and like I have to join like certain institutions and I have to join this club and comp that club and apply to this program, get that fellowship, win this scholarship. It's, you know, it sort of becomes this like competition and echo chamber in many ways. And I think in some ways, you know, the startup community on campus is also an echo chamber. And I'm probably reflecting a lot of those sort of, you know, opinions in this like podcast. But at the same time, I think sometimes it's easier to just take a step back and just meet other people that are, you know, really interested in doing what you're interested in. And for me, that's businesses and starting projects. And so meeting people at Harvard, learning from them has been more valuable than any class, any, you know, sort of speech I've gone to, any podcast I've listened to, anything like that. So I'd say my best advice, the one thing that I'm the most happy about sort of having done in the past few months and years, I guess, is just optimizing unintentionally for meeting people, you know, like you and like everybody else at Harvard Ventures, for example, and all of the other really cool people and cool communities around me, because that's what's given me the confidence to, you know, to build a venture, to do it twice. And to really just, you know, take risks. And so I think what I would suggest people do is really just never be afraid to like take that coffee chat, meet that person. You know, if somebody, if a group like Prod comes to you and says, hey, like, let's go to Italy for a month and just like hang out and like build startups, like, don't be afraid to say no. I think oftentimes you go into a meeting or a lunch or a, you know, event or whatever it is, thinking that nothing's going to come out of it. And then the most unexpected sort of connection happens. And that connection can lead to, you know, so many different things. I've met some of my best friends in the community, some of my business partners, investors, really everybody. And so, yeah, that's what I would say. I would say optimize for just meeting as many people who want to do cool stuff, just like you.
Run your own race, be unconventional, be ambitious, like you said. Just don't be afraid to say no. I think that's great advice to leave you with. Well, thank you again for joining us, Arhan. We can't wait to see all the things that you're going to accomplish. And make sure to check out Rove. What's the website again, Arhan?
It's rovecard.com, and you can use the code YCLaunch, all capital, to get early access to our wait list.
Definitely check it out, and we'll be able to travel the world just like Arhan. Well, best of luck to you. And for our audience, we hope that you keep listening and follow along the exciting season 4 of The Bottom Line. And until next time, thank you.
Thanks, Caleb.